He was an old Africa hand, having abandoned a failing farm in Sussex in the heady days of the Kimberley Rush, hoping to make himself a millionaire in the diamond fields. By the time he'd arrived in 1868, the whole of Colesberg Kopje, the hillock where the first diamonds had been discovered, was staked, and the fields around it too, for several miles. So Ryder turned to providing meat for the army of workers. With a pair of wagons and hundreds of sacks of salt to cure the game, he and a couple of native guides ranged over thousands of square miles. It had been a solitary existence, but one that Ryder grew to love, just as he came to love the land, with its haunting sunsets and dense forests, streams so clear the water looked like glass, and horizons so distant they seemed impossible to reach. He learned to speak the languages of various tribes, the Matabele, the Mashona, and the fierce, warlike Herero. He even understood some of the strange clicks and whistles that the bushmen of the desert used to communicate. He'd taken work as a safari guide so that rich Englishmen and Americans could adorn their mansion walls with trophies, and he had spent time finding suitable routes for a telegraph company stringing lines across the southern third of the continent. He'd fought in a dozen skirmishes and killed 10 times that many men. He knew and understood the African people and knew better still the savagery of the land itself. He knew he should have never accepted the job of guiding the others from Bechuanaland across the vast Kalahari wasteland in a mad dash to the sea. But there was always the lure of the big payoff, the siren song of instant wealth that had drawn him to Africa in the first place. If they somehow made it, if the uncaring desert didn't claim them, then H.A. Ryder was going to have that fortune of which he'd always dreamed.
Think they're still back there, H.A.?
Ryder squinted into the rising sun so that his eyes nearly vanished into his weathered skin. He could see nothing on the distant horizon but curtains of shimmering heat that formed and dissolved like smoke. Between them and the fiery sun marched dunes of pure white sand, shifting waves that rivaled towering hurricane swells. With the sun came the wind, which lashed at the tops of the dunes so that sand blew off their crests in stinging clouds.
"Aye, laddie," he said without looking at the man standing next to him. "How can you be sure?"
H.A. turned to his companion, John Varley. "They'll follow us to the gates of hell for what we did to them." The certainty in H.A.'s raspy voice made Varley blanch under his tan. Like Ryder, the four other men in their party were all English-born and had come to Africa to seek their fortunes, though none was as seasoned as their guide.
"We'd best get going," Ryder said.
They'd been traveling under the relatively cool cover of darkness.
"We can cover a few miles before the sun climbs too high."
"I think we should make camp here," said Peter Smythe, the greenest member of the group and by far the worst off.
He'd lost his swaggering attitude shortly after entering the sand sea and now moved with the shuffling gait of an old man. White crusts had formed at the corners of his eyes and mouth, while his once bright blue eyes had grown dim. Ryder glanced at Peter and saw the signs immediately. They'd all shared the same water ration since filling their canteens and jerry cans 10 days earlier at a brackish well, but Smythe's body seemed to need more than the others. It wasn't a question of strength or will. It was simply the lad needed to drink more to stay alive. H.A. knew to the drop how much water remained, and unless he could find another desert well, Smythe would be the first to die. The thought of giving him an extra ration never entered Ryder's mind.
"We go on."
He looked westward and saw the mirror image of the terrain they'd already covered. Sand dune piled upon sand dune in endless